And you're just like, oh, well, I'll just reach out to this person. They occurred to me during the day. And then you reach out and they're like, cool, let's do it.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. So I'm just going to quickly switch to tethering my phone because we living in a household with two adult children and my partner's on a call to London right now as
right,
well.
Right.
Sorry, my darling, can you just give me 1 second?
That's right. What we can do is stop the video. That tends to help.
I'm going.
And you can have a look at, and look at me as a monkey. See? Monkey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Look, I really do much prefer to look at you because I haven't had the chance to look at you for like 30 years.
And I'm
20
back.
Years.
Can you tell the difference?
Look at you. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
No, yes. All right, give me 1 second.
Yeah, no worries.
I'm going to switch over.
Okay. That worked?
Yeah, looks good.
Yep.
That seems a lot more stable.
Cool. So
even if we...
we're more stable than what we are, I guess. So I'm talking to Hannah Van Brown, and I don't know the last time I spoke to you. When do you reckon? I can't trawl back that far.
Well, the thing is, because we didn't stay connected after school, I would say the last time we spoke would have been the tail end of 96 when we graduated.
No. I'm sure I ran into you and your then husband at the time playing cricket and so forth. But
of course you would have. Yeah, absolutely.
So that would have been up until the early 2000s. Anyway, just to clarify, Hannah and I went to school. And it's probably been like 20 years since we've seen each other.
Yeah. 100%.
But through the magic of the internet, I was like, I know who would be a good chat on this. Well, that's HVB.
Yeah, look, HVB loves a chat. If anyone knows anything about me, they know that is the truth.
Well, I tell Wiggins that I was interviewing you, and his exact response was, HVB loves a chat. So that's a good sign.
Look, if that's the kind of reputation I have and that's the sort of things people are saying about me, I'm pretty okay with that, actually.
So you said, like, well, we probably didn't see each other until we graduated. So I'm going to dive into some questions straight away because we graduated in, what, November, December 1996? Yep. And then you got married. Yeah. And then you got married.
I did.
Like two months later?
Yeah. So it was February 1st, 97. Yeah. And it was very controversial because...
Controversial?
Well, it was controversial because I got engaged when I was doing my year 12. So I was studying for my HSC and planning my wedding at the same time. And everybody thought I was pregnant.
Because, oh, really? Of course. Like, that's why you're getting married.
Of course. Because, of course, the only reason you would get married is... because you're having a baby. If I was like 17 and getting engaged, that's obviously the only reason.
So
I got a lot of criticism about that, actually. There was a lot of people that were speculating and all kinds of stuff that went on around that time.
Who were the critics? Were they all ages? Were they peers? That's like people we went to school with? Was it you're getting it from?
First of all, what did your
parents think?
Okay, so my mother was very shocked.
Yeah.
Because she looked at me and went, that's my baby, because I'm the youngest of two. Well, I was at that stage, and my mum since had remarried and had my little brother. So that's another story altogether.
Yeah.
And she looked at me like I was a baby. And I was, like, I look back at photos, I'm like, I actually was a baby.
Yeah.
But both of my parents were very shocked. But they were shocked because of, you know, I guess the stage of life I was in, and I haven't kind of left home or anything. I was finishing school. I was a good studious girl, you know, like always a follower. And I think, though, that they understood that I'd never really made any kind of rash or unreasonable decisions to that point. I was quite mature for my age at 17.
I would agree.
At 17.
Yeah.
I grew up really fast in high school. And so for that reason, I think it made it a bit easier for them to rationalize that I'd made this very adult decision to get married. And mum was still a bit freaking out. Like, my mother does love a little bit of an overreaction, whether it's happy, sad, or otherwise.
Right.
But when Michael, my ex-husband, and I went to my mum and stepdad and said, we want to get married, my mother went, what? And my stepdad, Bruce, said, well, I guess congratulations are in order. And thank the Lord above for Brucey, because if it wasn't for him, I'm really not sure whether Michael would have left that house alive that night.
So, like, when you think back at yourself at age 17, and you've got two daughters now, right?
And they're, yes, I do.
And they're in their 20s.
Yeah, well, so this is really funny because we have this exact conversation really often at home, because Jamie, my eldest, is 23.
Yeah.
And Boston is 19.
Right.
And at Jamie's age, I already had two kids.
Yeah.
I was married for 4 or 5 years. and Boston, like, I was pregnant with my first when I was her age. So I look at them and go, there is absolutely no fucking way that they could have done this. Yeah. Like, so I don't know. Just different.
You really
people
get a perspective on, like, how your mum reacted now that they're that age. So how did that affect your, it's a very general question, but how did that affect your life having kids so young? So were you at 19 or 20 when you had Jamie?
Yeah, I just had turned 20. It was about 10 days between my birthday and her birth.
Right.
And look, I feel like I missed out on a whole lot of some of the things that you all did, because you all went off to uni together, mm-hmm. and did the uni life and traveled and did all of that. And I've done my life in reverse.
Right.
So I've had the chance to do all of those things, but in my late 30s, early 40s,
right. Yes.
When I became single again, the travel, I mean, I did a little bit of travel, you know, not lots, but I wouldn't ever change it. In fact, this was all part of my big life plan, right. was that I was going to have my kids young, and by the time I was 40, I would have my life back and I could live it, and I would be young enough to be able to do it and healthy enough to be able to do it. So really, while my life at this point didn't end up the path that was supposed to be,
yeah,
it's actually exactly where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah. So were there times, though, in your 20s where you had doubt about that plan, or was there no doubt? Right.
Nah. I mean, you're a parent too, right? So you know, like, once you have these little treasures that are wonderful when they're young and they look so gorgeous and sweet, and I think maybe my only reservations have been when there are times I just wanted to punch my girls in the face. Like, this is the thing, they never warn you about that.
Yes.
You know, they don't ever warn you that these wonderful treasures are awful to you when they get into their teens.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you know, they don't even get sorry about that.
There's no regret.
No, look, there's no regret. It's all part of the, you know, the more people you talk to about having teenagers, the more you realize. I was an unusual teenager in that I wasn't that kid. But it's been a very interesting time, but I absolutely have no regrets. I have beautiful memories. I have been able to participate in some wonderful things with my kids. And so, yeah, I really have no complaints.
Yeah, the idea that you hate your children is something they never tell you. Like, now you're talking about your girls when they were teenagers. My child made me feel that way when she was, you know, from ages 2 till now, every now and then. But it's healthy, right? It's healthy to have friends where you can say, I remember very clearly messaging one of my friends, Violet must have been 3 or 4, and saying, what do you do when you hate your child?
Yeah.
When you can't stand them, you can't stand to be in the room. And they're just like, just leave the room. It's the only thing you can do.
You've got to be realistic about these things, right? And I'm such an open book, right? I probably overshare. That's been my whole life. This is why everybody knows what's happening in my life, because I tell it all, warts and all, right? Yeah. And I don't mince my words, and I tell it like it is. But by doing that, you empower others to able to share openly and honestly, because that's the reality, right?
You know? It frees you up to have a bit of honesty in your life and get some honest feedback.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But it's vulnerable too. Like when you say, oh, this is how I'm feeling, and someone counters that and the other person is right, and you're like, oh, I haven't thought about that.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Shut down how I was thinking forever. You're like, oh, okay, good.
How dare they? And how wonderful of them.
How dare they? Exactly right. Well, I wanted to, like, we're going to jump around a lot in this conversation. I wanted to talk, you said you were an unusual teenager. And what made you unusual, do you think? Did you notice you were unusual at the time?
No is the really short answer to that question.
Yeah.
I think that's a lot of reflection and maturity in that, just sort of looking over my life. But all I knew was my life at that time. So during it, not so much. There were parts of my life that I was made to feel unusual about.
Okay.
I don't think that I would have described it like that while I was in it. It's an interesting thing when you get older, isn't it? And you have an opportunity to reflect. And honestly, once you got in contact with me to ask me to be on this, I was actually doing even some more reflection about my time in high school, and which I guess is kind of a natural thing because you don't sort of put your mind to it day to day.
Yeah. Well, I do. I mean, I find I do because I'm a teacher, and so it's never far from my mind of seeing the repeated behaviours.
Yeah. Interesting.
Like, oh, God.
Yeah. So I guess the unusual side that I knew I was at the time was that I know that I was a really well-behaved teenager.
Yeah.
And I knew that I was a big rule follower, which my mother loved, and even to this day will say that I was the perfect child. And nobody believes me until they actually meet my mother. And
I wonder she was so freaked out when you like turned up at 17 and was like, hey, I'm getting married. What's up?
Yeah, exactly. But it was also a source of upset for me as well, because I was really ridiculed for that in school.
Yeah, you said that you were made to feel unusual. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so, I mean, I was really, like, I won't ever use the word bullied, because I that's definitely not what this was. It was absolutely just kids being kids and just being unkind, you know. But I was always ridiculed for being the teacher's pet. And even actually, if you look at our yearbook, you'll see songs of our year, it's To Sir With Love, because I really loved my teachers. Genuinely, I love people and I love to talk to people. It doesn't matter what age they are, what nationality, what sexual orientation. Like, I will talk to everybody. And that has been in my life as long as I can remember. And so because I had this kind of more candid relationship with my teachers, kids of 13, 14, 15, whatever, just saw that as, oh, she's sucking up to the teachers.
Right.
You know that, you know?
Yeah. That's you were more mature than the rest of us, because I don't think I got to that point until, you know, year 12 probably. Like at our formal, I went missing for a while and people had to come try and find me, and I was sitting down with my English teacher talking to her for, I don't know, 40 minutes about how do you teach English and what's the good parts about being a teacher, like, I guess doing this, what I'm doing now, but at the school formal. That's what it took me to get to year 12. But I remember, and one of the things I've written down to talk to you about is, we sort of became friends because we were in the same maths class.
That's right.
And it was a real, again, like you said, reflecting upon it, was this real, I guess, a sign of maturity that happens with hopefully most teenagers, is that they start off, like, if you're known as the teacher's pet or the goody two-shoes, then I'm not going to be friends with you because you're not cool. Why would I want to be friends with you? And then by the time you get to year 11 or year 12, you're like 16, 17, you just go, oh, I like you because I like you. You know, like if all the other stuff gets in the way. I see with my, 13-year-old daughter, there's all this, oh, do I like this person? Are they, it's very romantic. Are they the right one for me? Are they treating me well? You just feel like saying, do you like them? Like, there's obviously some friends you don't like the way you talk about them. And it's just bizarre that, like, it took me, obviously, to get to, like, year 11 before I started to realize that, oh, I don't just be friends with the people because of some kind of cachet or some kind of status. Mm. It's, oh, I like them because I like them. And I have, again, since you kindly agreed to be on this, the memories I have of you are sitting together at lunchtime just having a chat.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell you what we chatted about, but I remember always being like, that was cool. That was a good chat. Got to the bottom of some things.
We probably solved the world's problems in a lunchtime.
Probably. We probably looked at other people and judged them and then how can we fix them? Probably.
That is that's potentially that could have happened. I don't know though.
You weren't very judgmental.
You could tell me. I don't remember, to be honest.
I don't remember you being judgmental, but a word you said before was kind. And again, year 7, 8, 9, nobody wants a friend that's kind. That's boring. Why would I want a kind friend? But I remember that was always a thing of like, oh, it's just very pleasant talking to Hannah. Aww. Always.
Well, that's really lovely. Yeah. I really like to hear that. That's really cute.
Yeah, very true.
I hope so. I had some good role models in my life, in my parents, all three. So I always say all three because I had my dad and my mom and my stepdad who came into my life while I was in high school, actually. Yeah. And they, like, I hit the jackpot, right? Like, I have got the most coolest mum in the whole world who everybody loves because you just can't not love Halsey, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I've got my dad, Anthony, who is just a kind, friendly, charismatic kind of person who welcomes everybody. And then I had my stepdad, and I say had because tragically we did lose him really suddenly and unexpectedly only a few years ago.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. And he was just like, the minute he met my mum, he treated me like I was his blood.
Yeah.
And he was just a brilliant, brilliant man. So if I turned out wrong, that would have been all my fault.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I think, wouldn't you want your kids to say the same thing about you? Yeah. That's a very nice thing to say about your parents. I don't know if they would say that, but it's a very nice thing. No, I don't think maybe my youngest will. She might say something like that, but I can't imagine my elder saying that.
Mm. Yeah. Sure. Yeah, but I can't imagine me saying that at their age either.
No, of course not. God, no.
Many years of understanding and growing up and being in situations they've been in and parenting and all that stuff, I suppose.
Yeah, the blame comes in their teenage years. I'm like this because of you. You're like, okay, yeah, cool. That's right. Fair enough. Yeah. Hard to argue sometimes, but okay. So now I'm going to tell you something about your dad, about Anthony.
Okay.
That I only remembered in this past week. Now, I don't know when it was. It may have been a birthday party you had. Did you have an engagement party in year 12?
Oh, yes. Yes, we did. That fun fact, that was a combined 18.
Now that's exactly where it was, right? So I remember talking to your dad at that event, and he just said, what are you going to do? Because like you said, it's a year 12, 18th. My memory is weird. Your birthday's in August from memory. You're a Leo.
That's right. Yes, I am. Wow, look at you go.
Yep, look at me go. And I remember just talking to him and he said, what are you going to do? What's the plan? What you ask every year 12 student, which annoys the hell out of them forever. And he asked, what do I want to be? And I said, I want to be an English teacher or a teacher. I hadn't worked out maybe primary school or high school. And I said, I wanted to be a teacher. And he said, okay, and how do you feel about that? No one had ever asked me that question, like, how do you feel about the job I want to do? And I said, well, I talked to other teachers and they had tried to dissuade me from being a teacher because teachers are weird like that. Like, you don't make enough money and it's hard and blah, blah, blah. You know, we're heroes, heroes. We're all heroes.
Yeah.
All teachers are heroes. But he said, well, do you want to be a teacher? And I said, yes. And he goes, do you think it will make you happy? And I said, yep. Yeah. And he said, will it hurt anyone if you be a teacher? I said, no. And he was like, so what's the problem? And I went, oh, thank you. And that was and then he walked away. That was probably the end of our conversation. But it was just like, oh, like you said, that kindness of just being like, oh, just get rid of that fog in your brain, all the other noises, and just get down to like, would it make you happy doing that? It's not hurting anyone. We'll just do that.
Yeah.
Like, cool.
That's really interesting because I know that, like, I've used those words, not in the similar conversation, but just, you know, just that whole, like, asking questions to understand, not to guide, or like, I'm no better than anyone else with my advice, but just helping people get to kind of a place that they're comfortable with what they're doing. And that does not surprise me, that story, but is a lovely and heartwarming story nonetheless.
Yeah, did you use your parents the same way? Were they like a font of knowledge? If you said you were a very, like the perfect child, then were you as open with them as you were with everyone else, I take it?
No.
No? Okay.
Not as a teenager, definitely not. So I was brought up in a really, let me just go back a step because I just want to qualify my statement. So I didn't really have a lot to tell them because I wasn't like, I wasn't doing anything that I would feel like I needed to withhold from them.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But I was brought up in a really, really strict kind of household, a Christian household.
Yeah.
So before my dad came out when I was 13, he was a minister at church. Yeah. And so my mum and dad were really involved in the church from the moment I can remember, always went to church twice on a Sunday, you know.
You go to church twice on Sunday?
Go to church. Yeah. So we were involved in Pentecostal churches, which is like the happy clappers. I call them. And I use the past tense because I'm not part of any congregation in my older years. So in Pentecostal churches, it's not uncommon that they have a morning service and a night service on a Sunday. So if you're a good Christian, you would go to both.
Man, that sounds, you know, annoying.
It certainly meant that your weekend was one day.
Yeah, that's right.
So it did certainly cut into, but I was going to say it cut into my weekend, but the funny thing was it kind of didn't, because my social life didn't really revolve around my high school friends. It was all my sort of youth group friends.
Yeah.
And they were all a lot older than me too. Like they were probably 3 and 4 years older than me. So that may have fed into some of my maturity at that time, just because I was around people just doing different stuff. You know, they'd finished school, or you know, maybe they were already married and had kids, you know. So these are the people I was socializing with. So the fact that I was going to church twice on Sunday probably really wasn't a big deal, to be honest, now I think about it.
Yeah, a lot of it's looking back like, oh my god, that happened. But at the time you're like, oh, that's just what I did.
Yeah,
just
that's it.
Just exactly. Life now I need to go back because I'm sure people listening heard you say something there and they were like, sorry, what? You said you were 13 when your dad came out.
Yeah. So I have a gay dad. My girls have a gay poppy, which they have known from a very young age. Yep. So that was an interesting time, I can tell you.
So were you in year 6 or year 7 then?
7. Yeah. So that happened in high school. So I just started high school. I'm pretty sure
it was
91.
Perfect timing to deal with that.
Yeah, great, right? Yeah. So it was... Yeah, I just established myself at the school, not hugely, because as you know, the school we went to, everyone kind of came from everywhere.
Yeah.
You didn't really know people deeply enough to feel really super connected to them.
No, the big year group too, it's 180
it was massive. Students or something. Yeah. Insane. And but one thing I have to say is Chris Whiffen, our year advisor, was ahead of his time in terms of the way that he dealt with that. Like, he was in tremendous support to me and my family over that time. And that's some of the unseen things that no one else had any kind of visibility of. And
that's right.
It just endeared me to him. And so probably why I spent a bit of time just hanging out and chatting, because he was so kind to me, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so he came out and yeah, I sort of had to rationalize all of the teachings I'd had in the church about that gay people are bad and you can pray the gay away and all that stuff. Yeah. And, you know, work out how I was going to feel about this change in my life with my dad being gay.
Can you remember, like, him telling you? Can you remember how, like, how that news was brought to you?
Yeah, no, he didn't. My mum did. So my dad had left and had left a note for my mum to tell him that he'd left, I believe, and I'm sure that they'll listen to this and correct me and say, Hannah, that's not right. But anyway, just some details. And he hadn't come back to the house for some time, and eventually my mum sat us down with two of her closest girlfriends, me and my sister, and said, you know, and basically told us at the dinner table in Terrigal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the reason your dad left is, you know, because he's in love with a man. And it's funny, you know, at that point in time, I can honestly remember sitting there just going, oh, okay. That was kind of my response, right? Like, it was just,
I've got
so
homework to do. I've got, can I get back to it? There's more important things. Gotta watch Saved by the Bell. These are important things happening.
All the important, probably had Bananarama I needed to listen to. Oh, that's another story. Remind me to tell you about the Bananarama. But my sister had a very different response. But yeah, so that was that moment in Terrigal where we just sat around with mum and I think she said to me, do you have any questions? And I was just like, no, I don't have any questions. Like, what do I ask? I don't even know anything about this stuff, right? So, yeah.
So you said your sister reacted differently. So how old was she at the time?
So she's 2 years older than me.
Right.
She was really close to dad. And I'm not saying that because I wasn't.
Yeah.
But what I do want to say about that moment when we were told is my mother said, it doesn't matter what any of this means, you know, your dad loves you and he's still your dad. Like, so in that moment of crazy and her own hurt, but whatever, she took the time to say that. Sorry, I just quick flash of a memory.
Have you talked to your mum about that as an adult now, like how she processed it?
Yeah. Look, we've had lots of conversations about it. My mum is an incredible woman. She is, there is no one on this earth that I know that can go through some of the things that she's been through in her life and be at a place of just complete peace and be so gracious with people and so welcoming of everyone. Like, it's, I can't even tell you. And everybody that meets her, of people that, like, friends I've made since, you know, leaving school or whatever, anyone that meets her for the first time, of people that I know, they're like, oh my God, I love your mom. I'm like, I know, she's great. So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's so again, at high school, the news, like, you get that news and then everyone knew at high school. Everyone knew who you were. It was like being a celebrity. Everyone in normal school, everyone knew who Hannah was. Her dad's gay.
Yeah. Right? You know, that's it on purpose, right?
What do you mean?
Well, I made a really conscious decision that I didn't want any rumors to start.
Okay.
So the minute I knew, I told as many people that cared to listen. because then it gave me some control over what was being said.
Huh.
So, yeah, so I was really quite vocal about, yeah, hey, guess what? My dad came out, I have a gay dad. And I don't know what words I used. I honestly don't remember the individual conversations, right. But it was very deliberate that I didn't, like, no one can talk shit about you if you're telling them everything they need to know.
Yeah. Mm. Right. How did you know that at 13?
I don't know. If you could ask me back then, I probably would have said it was some sort of divine intervention.
Right.
I'm not sure that's how I feel about that now. I don't know. Look, don't you think, Matt, that there are just innate things in you that are in your DNA that you just have or you don't have? And some of them can be learned over time, but some of them you just have.
Yes. Yeah. When people say, how did you know this, or how did you know that? You're like, I just know. Parents are famous for coming up with, you know, like things like that. Like I've told this on this podcast before, but when I was 14, my mother out of nowhere just said, yeah, you'll leave home first. I'm the youngest of three boys. Mm. Just out of nowhere. Yeah, you'll leave home first. Like we weren't talking about it, just completely out of nowhere.
Mm.
How did she know? She just knew.
Yeah. I'm really happy I did that though. Hey, don't get me wrong. It didn't completely shield me from sniggers and, you know, that kind of stuff that goes on in high school.
But you are right. You are right. It's, Hannah's dad's gay.
Mm.
Oh, okay.
And what?
Yeah, exactly. And you're right. That's,
Yeah. You've got a gay dad. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. She knows. Seems to be fine with it. You shouldn't be fine with it. I am. Okay.
Yeah.
But do you know what?
It was really cool though, because what it gave to me was this wonderful, I'm not going to use the word journey because it's a wanky word, but
please, thank you for that.
It's a pathway. It gave me a great pathway to just a completely different acceleration of acceptance. You know, I probably wouldn't have got there as fast as I did had I not had a gay family member. Along with that, I got to pass that on to my girls, which is just incredible, you know, to watch them and hear them interact with their friends, you know, from all walks of life, and conversations, particularly around the marriage equality vote that happened, you know, in my daughter's adult, she was able to vote on that. It's been awesome to be able to influence part of a generation that's sort of growing up in this world of acceptance and equality, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Not to mention the fabulous people I've met along the way.
Yeah.
Who normally look much better groomed than me. And, you know, all the men at Mardi Gras are prettier than me, but, you know, that part's not okay. But, the girls got to come along and march next to their poppy in Mardi Gras
for a couple
of years. And yeah, we did it all, babe.
Fantastic. So we'll move away from your dad in a second. How did he agree to be on You Can't Ask That on the ABC this year? Because that's really where I reconnected with you was I'm not sure who it was, but someone said, oh, by the way, Hannah's dad's on You Can't Ask That on ABC. Now, for those of you who don't know, ABC has this show. It's called You Can't Ask That, where it's a topic, often transgressive topic or a fringe topic, that people ask straightforward questions anonymously. And then people, you know, there's drug addicts, there's all kinds of different ones. But for your dad, it was cheaters.
Yeah.
Now, did he know it was called cheaters when?
Yeah.
So how did that how did that come about?
So I probably need to tell a short backstory to answer your question, because Dad, I sound like my father. He tells backstories and they're really long. And
we've got time here. We've got plenty of time.
And I always say to him, Dad, don't give me the backstory. Like, just give me the pertinent information. I don't need to know they're wearing a blue shirt. Yeah. I just need to know who you're talking about. So, yes, the episode Cheaters, so my dad actually left my mum because he fell in love with a man while they were in a relationship, or they were married. So that's why he ended up on that show particularly. But my dad turned his situation, obviously being a minister and you know, coming out and all that kind of stuff. He started a couple of not-for-profits, right, to help people who were trying to rationalize their faith with their sexuality. This is definitely not a plug, by the way, just to be clear. This is just to give you some background. So
yeah, we would never support a nonprofit organization at the Chattering Classes.
Of course not. So what came of all of that was that he started those, he wrote his autobiography, he got really active in the gay community, particularly around the areas of faith and sexuality, mm-hmm. Has become not an expert on the subject, but certainly recognized for his extensive knowledge and research about it, not only personally, but he has done so much. He reads all kinds of crazy stuff, got an OAM the other mm-hmm. year because in recognition of the work he's done. So the reason why he was approached was because someone had told the producers there that, hey, you need to talk to this guy because he's got a really interesting angle that's probably not your stock standard.
Yes.
And Dad's had a lot of opportunity to go on media. He's been approached by a lot of media. I feel like his media advisor because he normally calls me and says, Han, such and such show has contacted me. What do they do? Who are they?
Like, yeah.
He's 70 years old now, but still he's just like, he's so engrossed in what he does, you know, yeah, in the community that he doesn't watch TV properly, like all that kind of stuff. And he's been approached by a lot of, we were on 60 Minutes together, actually. Did you ever see that?
No.
Yeah.
That's too much. You're covered too much media. I can't keep up with all of it. All right. We might come to some other media later, but first,
Yeah, so anyway, so he called me one day and he goes, look, I've been approached to do You Can't Ask That. Yeah. What do you think? I mean, Dad's always been really super conscious of how mum's felt about the sorts of things that he's been involved in. So I'm the family barometer. So everything comes through me. And if I don't like it, it doesn't get done. Yeah. And if I'm in support, that sounds really arrogant. That's not really, it's not arrogance. It's just I'm balanced and can see both sides and am quite across what happens in media and how it works. So there's been some that he's declined, but I said, no, You Can't Ask, that's a great program and they will be respectful.
Yeah.
And they will handle it in every which way that they should. And they did, and they were amazing. And yeah, made it really clear that they were going to handle it with, you know, the kind of discretion it needed to. So it was good.
Yeah. It's fantastic. If you can find the episode on Cheaters, it's great. He comes across as, you know, very sympathetic character in that, and it gets compared to some of the other people on that show. It's not hard. Yeah. It's not hard. There's some people there that, need to take some responsibility for their actions, but they didn't.
Interesting, wasn't it? Yeah. He was very honest.
Very honest.
Raw. Probably the most raw I've seen him in any interview, actually.
Yeah. And again, it's a difference between like, oh, I'm going to tell my side of the story and the vulnerability, willing to be vulnerable and to you know, let other people imagine, you know, feel empathy for you. Yeah. Well, cheating in that way, usually we would be like, no, bad, terrible, which I'm guessing you had to put up with, right? That would have been part of the shame.
Absolutely. He's were kind of multifaceted too, you know, given his circumstances.
Mm-hmm. So can we move from your dad appearing on TV? When I told my good friends Stu and Richard, who we went to school with, that I was interviewing you, they're like, oh, you should ask her about when she was on TV. And I was like, what do you mean? They're like, she was on some reality TV show.
Stop like, it.
What are you talking about? What? And they're like, yeah, some dating show. And I was like, what?
It's true.
They actually mocked me for not knowing this, and I feel they should be mocked for knowing it. But either way.
Yes, well, no, so, it's true.
So as media advisor and someone who's a barometer of good taste, what was the show called?
Hell?
First Dates or something like that?
First Dates. So So I was married for 18 years. And remember how I was just saying before that I did my life in reverse?
Half your life. You married half your life, weren't you?
I was. At that point. Yeah, actually exactly half my life when we split. And so I kind of went through this days of just kind of being a separated person, which is kind of normal in your, I wasn't insular. I kind of kept living life because that's what I do.
Yeah.
But I certainly never considered dating ever. Like, I'm like, I'm not doing this. Yeah. I'm done. I'm never getting married again. Never dating again. It's not going to happen. And then it just got to a point where I'm like, actually, you know what? I think I'm ready. And as I started to date again in this crazy digital world as a 40-something.
Yeah.
Well, I was like 38 or 39 or something. Anyway, that's not important.
Backstory.
So, yeah, I know. Right? My dad's sitting there coming, I found myself on the dating scene again, and I would retell lots of stories to friends of mine about some of my dating experiences. I'd love to write a book. Hey, I'm so entertaining. Oh my gosh. But as a mature adult going on dates again with a supposed mature men, it was quite an enlightening experience. And so because of that, when First Dates advertised on Facebook that they wanted some people to go on it, I reckon I had the best part of 15 tags on Facebook. We're like, right. Hannah, you should do this. And I'm like, well, why wouldn't I do it? Like, what have I got to lose? I might meet the man of my dreams.
Right.
And I didn't meet the man of my dreams on First Dates. I have since.
Yeah.
So I did. It was such a fun experience. Like, if I was single right now, I'd 100% do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. You can find some clips still online with your permission. I'll post them. You have excellent reality TV facial expressions.
Oh, do you know what? It was so funny because I had no idea my face was so expressive.
Fantastic.
Till
yeah, I really.
And I had no idea. And then this whole like news article with like clips of my face, and someone's put some funny captions under, yes, Hannah, it's going to be over soon, and like all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, but at least they were on your side, I guess.
Oh, do you know what? Everyone was really lovely. Like he really got a hard time.
He did talk about his mankinis, right?
Yeah. But I remember for probably about 2 weeks after, I became really conscious of what my face was doing. And so I felt like the person who just had some Botox and my face didn't move, because I was like, I am not raising my eyebrows. I am not moving my face. Like, it was weird. It was so odd.
Excellent. Oh, there's no, like, it's pretty clear to see, like, the producers go, all right, we're going to use that, and we'll definitely use that face, and we'll use that reaction. Yeah. Goodness
me. I would have loved to have been, like, because when we went for auditions, like, it's a really long process to do these programs, right, even to go on First Dates, which should seemingly be quite simple. Like, I tell them what I want and they find me the man of my dreams.
Yeah, no, they go, oh, this dude likes talking about mankinis. He needs to be on the show. That's how it works.
And let's match her up, match him up. The woman who makes the best faces that make her look so strange and like kind of Jim Carrey-like. Yeah. And we'll put her against him while he's telling them about
it. If you think about it, they probably did rehearsals on camera where they asked you ridiculous questions and then you were like, what the fuck are you talking about? And they're like, she's perfect. That's what we need. Put her with the mankini man. Yeah, God.
Do you know what's funny though? I think the most asked question I've had since doing First Dates was, do they feed you the lines? You know, do they tell you what to say?
Right.
I can absolutely hand on heart tell you our date was completely uninterrupted. It was very organic. Yeah. The cameras are all hidden in pot plants and what have you. The only time the waitress came over to interrupt was because the way I'd placed it.
Right. Yes.
And that was it. The whole rest of the time was very, very natural.
So I guess that's the point, right? They have to make you feel, get rid of the performative nature of, well, you know, of, so people are performing and acting and then they can be themselves and reveal weird things. That's what people are looking for. Why are these people, who's the weirdest one? All right, him, tick.
Well, thankfully it wasn't me that time.
Yeah.
It's winning at life.
That's right. You were the least weird person on that date.
Yeah, I should get a medal for that or something, or at least a gold star.
Yeah. So I wanted to just to go back because, you know, someone our age who's was married young and I guess divorced young, how did you I mean, how did you cope with that? How did you reconcile with yourself, I guess, when a marriage breaks down? That's 18 years, and that's a long time, and it's a very long time when you consider when it started when you were 18. How did was that a lot of soul searching after that, or was it let's get on with it?
So probably a bit from column A and a bit from column B.
Right.
I think that back to this whole DNA, you're born with something or you're not. I was born with the ability to process things really quickly and also to have this relentless focus on the positive side of life. So that's in me. And so if you put those two things together in, I guess, a really quite traumatic situation of a separation, particularly when it wasn't my choice, it hurts. Like, it's hard. It's not simple. Like, none of this stuff is simple.
No, of course not. But
all I really wanted was to get to the other side of all of the awfulness and be proud of the way that I had behaved. So regardless of, so essentially the separation happened because my ex-husband decided to pursue another relationship. And so obviously that meant that I wasn't able to change his mind, or his mind was already made up or whatever. I'm not really sure, but you know, that decision was put upon me rather than something I was able to make for myself. And so sometimes separations can be really nasty.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that's it. All I wanted to do was just to make sure my girls were okay. That was actually my priority.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the rest, I just thought that I would deal with once the girls were older, you know, and because they were like sort of similar age to when my mum and dad separated, actually. I think they're like 13, 15 or 14 or something. So, you know, did they say,
all right, whatever, or were they, or did they didn't react the same way you did?
Not so much. No, they took it a lot. Well, they outwardly, they took a lot harder than I showed that I was taking it. But, you know, like, their dad is a good dad. He's a good dad, you know, like, he's not all bad. And you know, you'll hear me say that a lot to people when they ask me, you know, what happened or whatever, but he's a great dad. And we had a lot of fun times in our 18 years, because that's a long time to be miserable, right? So just wasn't the case. So this kind of, you know, ability just to process things fairly quickly, I guess I just got to a point where I was like, you know what, this isn't what I planned for my life.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I'm just going to do something different, you know, and I'm going to do it by myself, and I'm going to do it fucking well, and just sort of got on with it, you know.
You just strike me as a person who likes to just get on with it.
Well, I do, because life is for living, you know, and I love the world and everything in it, and it's just nice to be able to experience the world and learn more about people. And I figured if I was like crying in my pillow, what good does that do for anybody? Not me, and not my kids, certainly, and you know, not anything else. So it was a challenging time, though, because we were, you know, our worlds were so intertwined, you know. We were working together, we were, you know, doing this the like friends thing all together. Like, obviously we'd grown up together, so all of our core friendship group we'd known since we were first got married, you know. The girls played basketball, we were really heavily involved in the basketball community. Mm-hmm. it was relentless, because there was not a part of our world that were not together.
The divorce isn't just you two, it's a whole lot of community.
That's right. And I couldn't go to work and say, oh, well, you're never going to say said to me. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, I'll just go over there and I'll just tell him, you know. Yeah.
Hey, Michael, yeah. tell everyone what you said to me.
Yeah. But, you know, like when I say my life didn't turn out as it planned, I'm actually having the best time of my life right now, because I'm ended up meeting a gorgeous Pom, and he's a Matthew as mm-hmm. well, so clearly he's great.
Yeah. Does he complain about having the world's most boring name?
No, he doesn't.
Ask him how many times, like, he hears the name Matthew called out and thinks it's for him.
Oh, actually, I'll do that. But do you know the only observation that he's made about his name, particularly since being in Australia,
he's made?
He always introduced himself as Matthew.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
But it very quickly changes to Matt, Maddie.
Yeah.
You know, like, no one calls him Matthew but me.
Very rarely, yeah. My mother calls me Matthew if I'm in trouble, and that's about it. But then mate sounds like Matt. Like, ask him. I guarantee you, like, you get your head pulled all the time. Was that? Oh, no, there's 83 Matthews. I've had, like, coffee orders where there was, like, three Matthews getting coffee at the same time. They're like, order for Matt, and then you're like, yep. What did you? I don't know.
So you wouldn't think that that would happen with Hannah, right? But
yeah. Popular.
Because, like, Hannah was not popular. Like, you don't meet 40-year-old Hannahs. You meet, like, 20-something and below Hannahs. Like, there's thousands of them. I remember when the girls started school and, you know, in the playground, there's like, Hannah, I'm like, that's what I did. I did that whole, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, for my whole life, I was the only Hannah. All of a sudden, I'm not. But the other day, I was getting a coffee down at Terrigal, and there was literally two Hannah orders in a row, and some other Hannah, the bitch, tried to steal my coffee.
That's right. Okay. It's a plague. It's a plague. You need to always have a nickname for your coffee order. I think that's what I've learned.
Well, I actually now say Hannah Banana.
Hannah Banana.
Yeah, so I say Hannah Banana, and I expect you to call it that way.
Right.
My local coffee shops know who I am, so they always do it now. Like, they've just gotten to know that I'm a little cray-cray and like to have a bit of fun and bring a bit of joy and smiling to the place. But, yeah, so.
Well, these are things that we carry with us. We're going to wrap it up fairly quickly, but I just wanted to go over something from high school. You know, there are things that a legacy that we leave when we're in high school that you never realize. And it's the same in any kind of creative field. in any kind of creative field, you put things out into the world and you never know how long or how wide the reach is, or just how long things will last. Now, I can tell you that there are a couple of friends who are probably listening to this podcast, and also members of my family, who have heard me regularly sing "Who Will Buy This Wonderful Paper?" I'll Take Three, I Need a Good Read. I could do the whole song, but I'm not going to, from your year 12 performance. Now, in this year, I've talked to a lot of people. We seem to be getting back to discussing our year 12 performances. So I just wanted you to know that what you did, you know, with your creative team in year 12 drama has a much longer tail than you would have ever imagined. So if you had have said to yourself at 18 or 17 when you were doing a HSC performance about news, and we said, you know what, in 25 years people will still be singing this song, what would you have thought about that?
Do you know what the really awful thing is? I don't remember it at all.
That's right.
Zero memory of what it is to even, like, so obviously my answer to your actual question is I wouldn't know how long.
No, of course not.
I don't remember it myself.
You don't remember, you know? Of course, no, that's the thing. I think the main reason I remember it is because I'm still very good friends with Emma June, and so that comes up from time to time when talking to her, certainly in text as well, is anytime we're complaining about you know, what Murdoch did with the news, then we'll be like, oh, my God. News, glorious news. Yeah. It's just.
Was it recorded?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think it was on our year 12 video. That's probably why. That's where it started. I haven't watched that in God knows how long, but it was certainly on the year 12 video. Mm. Yeah.
Might have to go look in the archives for that.
See if you've got a VCR
Jog
player.
My memory.
Find a VCR player and go, oh, my God, look at how young we all are.
Yeah,
maybe if I can find an audio clip, I'll put it at the end of this episode.
Oh, well, wouldn't that be spectacular? Just don't put the audio of, like, my first dates, the guy rejecting me at the end. That'd be great.
But that's the best bit. That's the best face. That's 100% the best face. It's like,
yeah,
what? You get to say that?
I know. You don't get to say that to me. No, that's right. No, that's not how it was, but I was quite surprised as you saw.
Mm. All right. Well, I'm going to let you go. It's been an absolute pleasure catching up with you.
Yeah, so nice to talk
to you. We should definitely have a chat before, you know, we're 65, I'm sure.
I think that'd be good. Yeah, I think I could live with that. Well, and you can definitely catch up with us. We would love that.
And that's it.